You're listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi, your podcast for one-on-one Mets conversations.
What's up, Mets fans? I'm Matt Cerrone. Thanks for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi. Mets home runs in 2016 went a lot further than you think. For every Mets home run hit at Citi Field this season, Citi donated $2,000 to No Kid Hungry to help fight childhood hunger. Every dollar donated was enough for No Kid Hungry to provide 10 healthy meals for kids. And with the Mets' record-setting season of 112 home runs, the program raised over $224,000. That's awesome. To learn more about it, go to Mets.com/city. Today, I'm talking to our good friend, Rob Brender. You know him from the Mostly Mets podcast. He also works for SiriusXM, does a great job with all of their sports programming. Love when I hear him telling me what's happening around the leagues with SiriusXM Sports. Does a terrific job. Rob is going to join me today but we got to talk about the wild card loss, but also talk about the season as a whole. And then more importantly, start looking forward a little bit. Let's, kind of preview what is happening through the rest of the season. So the show is broken down into three sections. We look at the game, then we look at the season, and then the majority of the show is actually looking, let's be honest, talk about what they can do about some of these position players and how they can improve for next season. So before I do that, though, don't forget to check out the SNY.TV audio network. You can search for it on iTunes or SoundCloud or Stitcher or wherever you listen to your podcast. We got some really good stuff going on. Got podcasts about the Jets, the Giants, obviously all of the Mets stuff that we do. There's the Rangers hockey stuff. The Knicks blog podcast is awesome. So definitely check it out if you're a New York sports fan. Definitely check out the podcast. I think you'll really enjoy them. Again, SNY.TV audio network. Search for it wherever you listen to podcasts. I know you'll love it. And with that, here's my conversation with our good buddy, Rob Brender. So, unfortunately, I hate to do it, but the place to start is last night's game. I had the opportunity to write about it on Mets blog. People have heard from me already. So, just give me, where are you at after last night's game? How are you rationalizing what we watched last night?
Well, I think as you look at the overall scope of the season, this is what I woke up thinking this morning was, if you were to go back to March or any real time during the offseason, I would be disappointed by the results overall. I think it's hard to say that. And I think a lot of teams, there's so many other teams that didn't make the postseason at all that were thinking, well, you got there at least. You had the lottery ticket in your hand, so you should be satisfied in some ways with that. But I thought before the season, and I think you probably did too, that this is a team that could have won the World Series or at least competed for the World Series, gone deep into the postseason. So, again, if you were to go back before the season, before all the injuries occurred, before you knew how things were going to play out, I'd be very disappointed. But then fast forward 3, 4, 5 months and seeing what they went into the postseason with, who they had on the roster for last night's game, I was very satisfied with the fact that they even got into the wild card, impressed by the way they played down the stretch, granted against very weak competition, but you still have to beat those teams, and they did. I think they won 27 of their last 40 or something close to that, so very impressed by the work ethic of the coaching staff and the players and their attitude and getting into the postseason. And as far as the game itself, look, I thought that this was a toss-up game going in, Matt. I really did, because I assumed Syndergaard and Bumgarner were going to match zeros. They did. Bumgarner was slightly better just because he was able to keep the pitch count down and able to stay in for the entire game. But aside from that, Syndergaard was just amazing, as he was for the entire season. And they just couldn't get the big hit. And I don't know what it is, if it's magic with Bumgarner, because he's a great pitcher and he's likely going to be a Hall of Famer down the road. But what he does in the postseason is so incredibly impressive. This scoreless inning streak that he's on right now, and the way he does it, he's only throwing 91 to 93, but he spots every single pitch. He hits Buster Posey's mitt, it seems, every single time, right where he's asking for the ball. And that curveball to left-handers is devastating. And, other than that, I think the one disappointing thing for me is you look at who was in the game for the Mets at the end, with Eric Campbell at first, no offense to him, but I just don't think you should see Eric Campbell or Ty Kelly in playoff games when you have guys like Michael Conforto, who has so much potential on the bench, never saw an at-bat. Lucas Duda didn't even make the roster. I don't understand that for the life of me. So there's some flaws with this roster, and I think that they gave themselves less of a chance just based on the overall roster going in. It could have been a little bit better.
I know. That is the thing I keep coming. Well, it's for me, it's two things. It's all those things you mentioned, right? The roster stuff, tie game, winner go home, eighth inning, huge moments. You know, this is it. And with Conforto, Duda, you know, Darnold apparently unable to get in the game for whatever reason, whether on the roster or not, we have Ty Kelly and Eric Campbell. And I mean, Ty Kelly got a hit, and that's fine.
But
I mean, you know, it's just, I don't know. And so there's that. And then on the flip side, would it have mattered with the way Bumgarner was pitching? I mean, my God. So like, that's the thing that I keep struggling with. It's like all those moves are right. And maybe, you know, if Noah can go nine or go eight and Reed is in the ninth, Familia gets a different mix to pitch to. And so maybe that's it. But Bumgarner was nasty. And they clearly, you know, he made Cespedes look silly. And clearly something's going on with Yo, by the way. No one really talked about it. He wasn't on field stretching with the team before the game. That was the first indication to me that, like, what's going on? And then if you remember, he didn't celebrate with the team because he was in the trainer's room getting treated the whole time. So, like, I don't know. Obviously, that quad was bugging him. Every time he would run in the outfield, I'm sure they didn't – I don't know if they showed it on TV. I was at the game, but he was banging the quad and, like, massaging him. Like, clearly he's an issue. He looked ridiculous in the box those last couple games. I mean, he was, like, falling down. I don't know. It just didn't feel like it was going to be their night at the plate with the way he was slinging it.
Absolutely agree with you 100%. I'm not sure that a healthy roster or even a better roster, let's say he was facing the Boston Red Sox last night, or a tremendous offense, I'm not sure they hit him either. So I agree with you 100% there. And you brought up a great point that I forgot to mention, which is not only the injuries for the guys that couldn't be there on the field physically, but the guys that were, Cespedes. We didn't even talk about Cabrera, who's been playing on one knee now for the last, month or so of the season at least. So your best hitters are injured. And I think a loss that really hurts them is at second base. You know, I thought Neil Walker could have given them something from the right-handed side of the batter's box. You don't have him. You didn't have Dilson Herrera, of course, because of the trade to replace him. And granted, TJ Rivera was very good down the stretch, and he did double in the game. Kudos to him. But the fact that TJ Rivera is batting fifth in your lineup in the postseason, a guy that was undrafted that probably wasn't even going to be on the roster if everybody was healthy, boy, it's tough to swallow. But, you know, it's stupid for me to say this, but I have to. That's baseball, right? I mean, you don't know who's going to be healthy. You don't know who's going to be injured. And the fact, again, that they were able to fight through all those injuries and make it to this point, I think you have to be somewhat satisfied with that.
Right. Well, that's a good transition into the overall season as a whole, which, you know, and it's so tough because you mentioned this, and this is an excellent point at the beginning about the adjusting expectations, because that's really what it is. I mean, to know that the Mets would be out of the playoffs by October 6th, you know, if we talked about that in March when we were at spring training, that you're right. That would have been a massive, major disappointment. But by August 19th, when they're 60-62, obviously that completely changes the perspective, especially in the wake of losing all the guys that they lost, all the pitchers and everything else. I mean, I suppose in March, if you told me all the guys that would be hurt, maybe I would have had a different point of view. And I mean, that just goes to show you the ebbs and flows and the ups and downs of the roller coaster season that's baseball. The 162, you know, one game seasons,
right.
163, I guess, depending on the year. It really is remarkable. And you're right. I mean, it's in some ways I kind of hope this adds a little, not some cold water, a little bit of a slap in the face. I hate to say that, but you know, I go back to spring training. I think about the cars and the horses and the sort of there was a different vibe to it. And I kind of hope if there's a silver lining to any of this, it's that what David Wright knew going into it, which is you can't take anything for granted. Just because you got there doesn't mean you're getting back. And if anything was taught to these guys, some of the younger players this season, it's that you never know. Guys are going to get hurt. Crazy things are going to happen. Nothing's a guarantee. And, you know, maybe this helps them in some way, shape, or form. When all these pitchers come back, maybe that's something for them to look at.
Yeah, I think that there's okay. It's okay to have a little bit of fun in spring training. I'm all for it. But they sort of took it a little bit over the top. And you talked about the horses and such and all the videos that were made. And maybe they do come in with a more business-like approach maybe is the way to go at it next season.
I think you'll see that too. I really do. I really, really, truly – I think when they come in, especially guys like Harvey, these guys that had all – now they're coming in, it's different, right? Like they missed a lot of this. They're going to be – you know, I don't want to curse, but like, they're going to be serious when they come in. I feel like they're going to feel like, you know what, we can't let this slip now. We're going in the wrong direction, you know?
Oh, 110%. And they still do have a roster, right. And we don't know what it's going to look like. But with all those pitchers back, assuming that they come back, they still have a roster going forward that should be capable of making deep runs in the postseason for the next few years. And despite everything we just said, with all the stuff during spring training and the approach going in and the you don't know factor, I still think that if they just could have kept three of those pitchers healthy, that and maybe Duda stays in the lineup the whole season, that they probably do make a run deeper in the postseason. It just changed so much. And I give all the credit in the world to teams like the Mets and the Dodgers specifically. The Dodgers winning their division by a handful of games over the Giants. They dealt with almost as many injuries and devastating ones like the Mets did. They lost Kershaw for 2 months, and they were able to win their division going away. I give all the credit in the world to teams like that. You know, you look at the Red Sox. I thought the Red Sox would win their division by 20 games going into the season just because they had that kind of roster. And the Texas Rangers were great and have a fantastic roster. But teams like the Mets and the Dodgers specifically, they were able to overcome those injuries. Boy, that's something. I mean, yeah, to be able to do that.
You can't lose, what is it, 7 or 8 of the guys on your start, you know, in your opening day lineup. That is unprecedented, and really, when you say it out loud, you look at it on paper, it is really ridiculous. I mean,
yeah, and not just the fact, Matt, that they were the starters too. You're losing the key starters, and you're losing the big personalities and leaders. You know, for all the flack that Harvey takes for the stuff off the field and such, I still think that everybody looks up to him in that clubhouse, especially the other pitchers. You know, if you have him at the front of your rotation. Not that Syndergaard wasn't great in that role, too. He was. But I still think Harvey is the guy that kind of guides and runs the ship. So if you have him, you have all the confidence in the world going into a long series in the postseason that you're going to win those starts. And then you'll follow it up with Syndergaard and then with DeGrom. So I think losing Harvey was huge. You lose David Wright and just his presence. I know that's a lot is made of that. Maybe it's a joke to have a guy just in the clubhouse. But I really do think David Wright makes a difference just being around this team. We've seen that in the past where they just seem to play better when he's there. So to me, you know, you lose that, you lose your captain and he's not around. And I brought up Neil Walker. I thought Neil Walker did a great job in the leadership role with this team. That's a huge bat to lose. You know, all these names, my God. I mean, really, like you just said, it's tough to really imagine all these losses. Unbelievable.
It is amazing. And so in that regard, this is good. This is very therapeutic for me because you're right. Talking this through, I feel a little bit better about where they're at. Like I do feel good about the future. I mean, the fact of the matter is, obviously there isn't a front office in baseball that wouldn't take Harvey and DeGrom and Mats and Wheeler and, oh, by the way, Syndergaard and Colon if he comes back, who had a terrific year. So, I mean, and look, Familia had a rough night. He's had some problems here in these big games, but you know, they're just baseball games, and the fact of the matter is he's done a terrific job in about 100 of them over the last couple of years, and that's hard to deny. So, I mean, they're in a good position with that, and I think when these guys all come marching through the front door next year in the same uniform, healthy, you know, coming off of what they just experienced, I think when you put all that together, I think they're in really good position, and that doesn't discuss, which we can now get into if you'd like, that doesn't get into really a lot of what's up in the air about the position players on the team, which there's a lot of decisions to be made. Actually, before we get into that, I just one other thing, because we haven't had a chance to talk about it, is where do you stand on Terry Collins? Because that's, you know, what we just talked about, the fact that he navigated the team through that, that's huge. At the same time, we started this conversation with some really bizarre moves that he made in the game, and that wasn't the only one. I mean, that went on for months. There was a lot of confusion and a lot of mismanagement. And so I still am kind of unclear on how to square those things. Obviously, you should be back opening day, but it's going to be a short leash, I think. And so if you were the GM, I mean, where are you on him leaving this season going into the next?
Yeah, I've been a Terry Collins supporter. I think if anybody follows me on Twitter out there, they know that. I probably take it to another level with that because I'm trying to show all the people that really are against Terry Collins. I thought he should have been fired throughout the season, really for the last couple of seasons, that all the little minute things that you can pick at during the year don't really encompass all that he brings to the table. Because I think he does, and we talked to Wayne Randazzo during the Mostly Mets podcast at some point this year, and Wayne brought this up too, that if you see Terry away from the field and the way that he talks to the players, and obviously his ability to motivate the players, I think he does that to an exceptional level. I think he's great with the media for the most part. Sometimes he's a little bit too honest. Which, as a media member, you love.
For that, for this media, when you're honest about the things that's going to keep them busy, it's a positive.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Anything that distracts from negative, right. I think, is great. And you can't bang him for that too much. So I'm with you there. I think he does all of those things at an exceptional level. His on-field managing on occasion, in fact, maybe a little bit more frequently than that, is questionable. His usage of the bullpen, questionable. His moves in starting certain players like Eric Campbell on occasion, where people can say, well, why aren't you starting player X instead of player Y? He makes those mistakes on a pretty regular basis, or at least what the fan base deems as a mistake. If it was me, I'm with you 100%. He's coming back. He's starting next season. I'm sure he wants to be there. Maybe he wants it to be his final year. I don't know. Terry's getting up there in age. I have no clue what his interest is going forward. But assuming he wants to continue for the foreseeable future, I would give him another year at this, and I'm with you. It's probably a short leash, especially if they do stay healthy. You can't bang him at all in a season where everybody gets hurt and then right. he takes you to the playoffs for the second straight year, sure. something that's only happened one other time.
Yeah.
You have to give him an opportunity yeah. to come back, as much as that hurts some of the fans that just, for whatever reason, have it out for
him. So do you think – I didn't come around to this towards the end. Our old friend Michael Barron actually kind of got me into this line of thinking, which is, you know, perhaps it's more the coaching staff. Like maybe he needs a little more sharp, a little more astute, a little bit more – you know, maybe a different mix of coaches. You know, he obviously utilized Bob Guerin a tremendous amount. I mean, anybody that was around that dugout knew the level to which they communicated. I mean, they were arguing constantly, you know,
yeah.
for good reason, because they were discussing things. And basically, I like Dick Scott as a person. He's a great guy. I think we've all had opportunities to talk to him. He's incredibly smart when it comes to the players themselves. But I don't know that I ever saw the two of them talk at all during the during the game. So, you know, I don't know if that was part of the issue. I mean, these are things we can't answer because we're not in the position to do that. But I truly think that that is an area that Sandy and the front office really needs to thoroughly investigate before they sort of lock in. So coaches have Tuffle. I don't know what was going on with him at third base this year. He was sending guys
bad.
When they should stop him when you should send him, having him run on guys with cannon arms. He was all over the place with the things he was doing. I don't know much about Goodwin, you know, in terms of what he does or doesn't do, so it's hard to judge that. But I just feel like, you know, maybe the support staff is where he needs a little bit of a change in kind of assistant leadership. Because I'm with you. When it comes to looking those guys face-to-face and keeping them on track, you can just, like you said, watch Terry talk to these guys, and you can see the respect. You can see it.
Sure.
And you can't dismiss that. That's huge, and there's no guarantee that the next guy you bring in will have that. So, to me, it's maybe on the edges, you know, trying to, you know, work it from that angle. Does that make any sense? You're on Fields, and you see that, so what do you think?
110% agree, and I'm with you that I never saw Terry conversing with Dick Scott at all, period, before the game, after the game, during the game, nothing, which isn't to say they didn't. I'm sure they did, but there wasn't that healthy interaction during a game where he's getting guidance. I did see him talking to Dan Worthen a lot about the pitchers, but never to Dick Scott. And it makes me wonder, and I think Adam Rubin's the one that I saw bring this up first. The minute that Chip Hale was fired in Arizona, that's the perfect guy in my eyes well. I don't know what other opportunity he's going to have with managing. Maybe he can jump one job to the next, although I don't think so. I guess it depends what's going to be available. But that's a guy where you can bring him in. He's still very young. He wants to be a manager, I'm sure, again. And you can give him the bench coach job. You groom him to be your next manager. If TC falters at any point during the season, or you just want to make a change for whatever reason, boom, you plug Chip Hale right in, or you wait until the following year or whenever. But I agree with Adam on his sentiment that that's the perfect guy to plug in there.
Yeah, the good thing about Chip Hale is he's tight with Wright and a lot of some of the other guys, you know, that he knew from before. So, I mean, he'd have a nice, you know, ally or lieutenant in David. The, you know, I'll throw a bone to Mets fans who I actually think there are some people in the organization that would consider this, despite what transpired, is Wally Backman would be amazing. It's not going to happen as long as Sandy's there. And it may not, you know, maybe it shouldn't happen, but he would be terrific. You know, Terry and him have an awesome relationship. I'm 90% certain that Terry called him almost immediately as soon as, you know, Wally was let go.
Sure.
They've been, you know, they're tight. And no one, I mean, look, Wally knows those players. Obviously, he coached almost every single one of them. Got them ready for the big leagues. Like, he'd be awesome. It's not going to happen. It's a shame. But, like, somebody like that, you know, someone who knows and is that's just going to be involved that way, I think would benefit Terry. It just seems like maybe that's what he needs, you know?
100%, yeah. And we don't know, as you just said, the working relationship between he and Dick Scott, what it actually is, how much he trusts him. I think that's a big part of this too, is if you have that working relationship already with Wally, if he knows Wally really well, or if he knows Chip Hale obviously really well, and they have a good working relationship where he can go to him mid-game and say, what do you think I should do here? And he trusts his tactics. I think that's huge to have.
The tough thing about this kind of maneuver, though, because we're now, you know, talking a little bit about the offseason, is you can't – they couldn't just replace Dick Scott, right? Because like, that's obviously a huge judgment on him. So you got to make other moves, and you got to do other things with the coaching staff. So it's a larger conversation. But the point is – I guess the point being it should be a conversation.
Oh, I'm with you. And, you know, I just wonder. I don't know how it goes with the front office in terms of – replacing coaches during a winning season, and technically this is a winning season, right? You made the postseason when you weren't really supposed to after all the injuries. I wonder how easy it is to justify change at that point, you know, with anybody in baseball, with your fan base. I'm sure it won't be that hard, but you know, without getting any kind of backlash from the Dick Scott camp, I don't know how many people care. You know, would the media care? Would the media write about it a lot? I don't know. But to me, it's going to be really tough to go to Dick Scott in a year where you made the postseason and say, hey, Dick, this just isn't working, unless Terry and Sandy have had conversations, which I'm sure they have, about the coaching staff, and they've said to each other, something isn't working here, let's make it a little bit better.
Right. Yeah, it's a hard thing to know fact from fiction, you know. So, but anyway, so let's move on to the position players, because that's actually a more fun conversation. So let's start real quick with Neil Walker. Do you offer him? And listen, no one of these answers, this is the best part about this game, is a singular yes or no. There's always qualifiers of, well, how about this and what about that, which is great. So what do you do with Neil Walker? Do you offer him the $17 million, I'm guessing it is, you know, a qualifying offer? Do you try to sign him long-term? Like, what do you do?
I definitely give them the qualifying offer. As long as they know that the back is healthy, which I assume it is, according to some of the stuff I read this morning, it sounds like he's very upbeat about it, that he thinks that this is going to correct an issue that he's had for a long time, as compared to the opposite of that, which is, oh my goodness, now he has this debilitating issue he just had to have surgery for. It's going to kill his market. He thinks the opposite. I'm going to go with him on this, that he's going to be healthier. I thought he was great for the most part. Yeah, he had that dry spell, which ran from, what, middle of May-ish to middle of June or end of June. Right, who didn't exactly at that point? And that's when Cespedes was also in and out of the lineup, so he had very little protection there, and Duda was gone. So, but I like Neil Walker. I think he's a good veteran to have around. You plug him in at second base if he accepts that qualifying offer, which I think he's one of the guys that may. I don't know exactly what the market's going to be. The market, that's the problem, Matt, is that the market for position players is so weak this offseason in free agency that guys like Neil Walker might wind up, even after this kind of injury, getting a 3-, 4-, 5-year deal. I mean, we saw Denard Span last offseason getting a 3-year deal with the Giants after his major injuries. So, you know, if you can get Neil Walker even on a 3-year contract, I would go ahead and do that. He's still young enough and very productive from both sides of the plate. And he's a good leader to have around, but was okay at second base, didn't impress me all that much defensively, but I think he could be a little bit better. And the other options aren't great, and you don't have Dilson Herrera waiting in AAA right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I mean, I guess TJ Vare is your fallback position. You also have Wilmer Flores. You have Jose Reyes at the league minimum. You got to figure they pick him up, you know, with his option. So, I mean, they do have, you know, people they can put there. But I'm with you on Walker. I have a feeling this is going to be one of these where, much like Murphy, like where the player and Sandy are not going to see eye to eye on his value. They're going to look at him, you know, in that 1 year, maybe two type of thing. And I think the market, like you said, is going to give him more, just because it's not like we're in the golden era of second baseman and position players are weak. And this is an opportunity to get a guy who has a track record. He's young enough and he's played in New York. Like he dealt with all this. I mean, to sign a guy like that to, you know, bring him to wherever, you know, it's a bonus. I think the competition's going to be tough, and I can't see, especially given the fact that Wilmer's there and Reyes is there and Rivera's, like, I just don't see them going 3-4 years for Walker, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, look, this team needs some retooling. And I know you're going to get to some of the other positions here in a minute, but if you know you can make a deal in the offseason for a big bat and they're willing to spend a little bit of money, third base could be a place where they might be able to do that. And I know with you, in private, we've brought up the name Evan Longoria. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. That's a huge name, and I'm not sure Tampa will move him. But if they did, let's just say in pretend world that they could upgrade third base because they knew David Wright's not coming back, and they wanted that leadership, that presence, a guy who can hit some home runs, who's 30 years old, and they're willing to pick up some of that cash, and they could plug him into third. Now it makes sense where you're not going to bring Walker back. You shift Reyes over to second base, and you let him pair with Cabrera up the middle. I think that's a possibility or something like that, too. But that withstanding, I would definitely look to bring Neil Walker back, 100%.
You know, it's funny. The Longoria thing, I think, is going to be a topic because I do think they're going to seriously look at him, or the Rays will seriously look at moving him this year. That was the talk during the trade deadline, that this was going to be the offseason they do that. There'll be a lot of suitors. I don't know who's going to take on that money. The Mets, it's interesting because the guys they would have used to acquire him now are all hurt, basically all the pitchers. So it's going to hurt him. You know, and then you also have Wright. You don't really know. You know, it's a bold move to make, obviously. Longoria is significantly better, has a lot more upside, but that's a bold move to make without knowing what Wright is capable of. So that's going to be a tough trick for the Mets to turn. I don't know where the upgrades come, but that's a tough, tough place. First base is going to be an interesting option. I don't know what goes on there. Catcher is another one, which is really hard to predict because there's not a lot of good free agent options. There's frankly not a lot of good trade options. So these are tough spots, tough spots.
You know, the one thing working in the Mets' favor in terms of trades this offseason is if all of these pitchers are truly healthy and they're able to start spring training and you have a good feeling you're going to go into the season with at least five of them, and I'm including Bartolo in that, so let's say five out of the six make it through spring training healthy, ready to start the season, all of a sudden now you've established tremendous value with Robert Gazelman and with Seth Lugo. Now I'm saying tremendous, maybe that's overstating it a bit, but some value there I would think in trade with those two pitchers after the seasons that they just had. Maybe that gives you two pieces in trade that didn't have quite that same value. I'm not saying that they could headline an Evan Longoria deal, but maybe they become a nice little chunk of an Evan Longoria type deal or something else, whatever the trade market winds up being.
I asked a little bit, you know, people with other teams about them, and I get that. That's kind of how I see that. They're not that they're, you know, it reminds me of Fulmer. It's that same kind of, you know, you'll get somebody in a walk year, you know, it's going to be hard to really build a deal around them. But where the Mets have equity, this is how this was explained to me, is they have a lot of equity when it comes to these pitchers because the track record's there. These guys that they have developed have, in some cases, like Fulmer to a certain extent, Gazelman, Lugo, you know, have exceeded expectations a little bit. And so, you know, that builds equity with these other teams. It gives the Mets a little bit more rope, I think, and a little bit more value built into some of these guys. So it'll be interesting to see, like you said, what they do with them. But man, it's a gamble because you don't really know where some of these other guys are. Like, we haven't seen Matt throw. We haven't seen DeGrom throw. We haven't seen Wheeler throw in forever. How long? We haven't seen, you know, so like, it's a tough gamble. And Syndergaard, you know, look, he carried a ton of weight this year. For 2 years in a row now, this kid has pitched a lot in a lot of stressful innings. And, like, I worry about him going into next year, too. And who knows where Colon's going to be. I hope he's back. But, like, it'd be tough to trade anybody, any of these arms. And then that puts you back in this boat of what do you do with the position players. So how about Cespedes? How do you approach him?
Boy, I'll tell you, Matt. You have to look to re-sign him, bring him back. I didn't like what I read earlier today, and I don't remember who wrote it, so I'd love to give credit. It may have been Adam Rubin again that said the Mets are going to look to give Cespedes a similar deal to the one they gave him this offseason, which is the 1 or 2 year deal, or actually a 3 year deal with an option to get out after the first year. I can't imagine, after the two seasons he's put together in New York now, that some team somewhere isn't going to give him a long-term deal at this point. There just has to be one. We know the Angels need a ton of help, and I know Artie Moreno in the past has said he doesn't want to spend a lot of money right now. I think it's hogwash. If he wants to compete and he wants Mike Trout to stay in there and stay with that team and be able to compete for a championship, he has to give him help. Albert Pujols had a great year this year, but look, he's injured all the time, and he's kind of getting to the end of the wire. Why wouldn't they spend the money on a left fielder? That was a black hole for them the entire season. Why wouldn't – well, maybe not the Yankees. That might be a bad example because they're semi in the rebuild. I don't know if they think they can compete for a playoff spot as soon as next year, but maybe they want to spend the money. There's just got to be a team somewhere. Maybe it's the Tigers that want to bring him back. Yeah. So if you're the Mets and you're going to approach Cespedes and you're going to say we're going to give you a similar type deal – I don't think he takes it this offseason. Yeah. Well, I'll be shocked.
If he does, it's going to be the same routine. It's going to be in, you know, the last week of January, because one of these American League teams, this time around, you have the White Sox, you have the Tigers. You know, who knows what the Yankees are doing, but you can make an argument that he makes a lot of sense for them. Right. You know, I don't see them doing it because it's kind of out of line with where they are, but it, you know, who knows? And, you know, he just would be a good, look, we always say it, oh, got to be a good DH, but like in his case, he can play left field, and he's a Gold Glove winner in left field. But when his quads bark in, or he's got this issue going on, or whatever it is, because he clearly, you know, has some stuff happening, you know, you put him there, it just prolongs that deal. I mean, he just fits an American League team at this point, like a glove, pardon the expression. And it's just hard to believe this year, this time around. Last year, there were not a lot of teams out there looking for that kind of player. So the Mets had that going for him. This time around, I just don't think that's going to be the case. And his people know that already. There's no way they don't know what the market's going to be. He's going to opt out. He's going to test this thing. And if the Mets get him back for that deal, it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be January. It's going to be a stressful winter of debating this again and again.
Right. And at the same time, you know, we looked at the other teams that are interested in him. From the Mets' perspective, with as left-handed dominant as they are in the outfield right now, mm-hmm. and with as good as he has been for them, he has been the guy offensively for 2 years leading them to the postseason. How do you turn your back and say a 4-year deal or a 5-year deal, even at his age and even with his injury history right now, is too much? I don't know how you do it. Yeah, and I know they're going to say, well, we brought in Jay Bruce. So we have Jay Bruce coming back. He'll give us the 30 home runs. And we got Conforto. He's been sitting there. We've got to give him playing time. I'm sure that that's going to be the reasoning. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they haven't established themselves to be near the player that Cespedes is. I just don't know how you let him go.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, the other thing is power hasn't been their issue, right? Like people are going to, oh, they got to get another big bat. No, they don't. They don't need another big bat. The home runs were not the problem. The problem was guys being on base, putting the ball in play, you know, sacrifice fly with a runner at third. Like they need guys that put the ball in play. That's been one of their big issues the last few years. And I could totally look, if they want to go that direction, I could see them making that pivot where, well, we'll let him go and we'll, like you said, we'll do this and we'll go get these other players and they're going to kind of piece it together. To me,
right.
The way I look at it is signing him, even though those last couple years are going to bite you, it's an investment in those pitchers we mentioned, because you mentioned Trout and wasting his years. I mean, look at David Wright and wasting his. You know, you can't. This is a couple years here, max.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, if you can get a, you know, 30, 40 home run guy in there with all the flaws that come with them and all the craziness, but that production and that guy in the middle of the lineup, because that's going to support these pitchers, which at the end of the day is what's going to win them a ring or not. You know, it's not my money, but that to me seems to be the only approach.
100%. And by the way, we should also mention he's also a draw. He's a draw for this team.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure he sells tons of merchandise. I'm sure that people do actually go out to the ballpark to watch him play. And you don't find that all the time. And they can make money off him. It's not like, you know, he's just a wasted investment. He'll help them on the field. He'll sell the merch. He'll do all those little things. I don't see a reasoning that really justifies letting him go. And I know he's tied directly to Bruce. I brought up Bruce.
Yeah, that's the next thing.
Yeah, at this point, if you know you're going to bring Cespedes back, what do you do with Bruce? It's a $1 million question. Do you give him that option year because you think that there's some value and trade him, mm-hmm. or do you just let him walk? I don't know what kind of value.
I can't see them letting him walk. That just seems nuts. That's just such a wasted opportunity. I mean, look, it's $13 million. Like they can, at the very least, they could pick up the option if they can't trade him. He's in the mix next year. Look, they're obviously going to rotate their outfield around. They do it all the time. Someone's going to get hurt. They'll figure something out because he can be someone that gets traded next year. I can't see any way that they, after the move they made and all they went through with him, who knows where his trade value is at, by the way, but I can't see just letting him go. I just think that's nuts.
I wonder, let me ask you this question. This is an interesting one that I thought of yesterday. If they had it to do over again, hindsight 2020, of course, do you think they trade Conforto in that deal at the deadline and get Luke Roy? Do you think they make the deal?
I don't know. That's a good. I don't know. They didn't want to do it then. They were pretty, you know, stern on that. So I can't see them back. It's not like they were on the fence and they went this other direction because it was the path of least resistance. They thought it was a better deal. I think, you know, they just were against making that deal. I can't remember who it was again. It was Conforto. Who was the pitcher?
Wasn't it Conforto and Wheeler?
Yeah, I think it was Conforto and Wheeler. But Conforto is the sticking point. And it was a different another position player. I can't remember, but they, yeah, I don't think so. And that's not how these guys operate. But I'm with you on Lucroy. That was the target, man. That would have really made a difference in the way the lineup was structured and what they needed in that lineup in terms of, like I said, putting the ball in play. Like, he was the man.
He does everything right. He fills every void that they had. And I think that's another huge question for this offseason now becomes, what do you do at catcher? One of the most confounding parts of this entire season, and we barely brought up his name, is Travis d'Arnaud.
Yeah.
What in the world is going on there? How does Rene Rivera steal his position? What do you do now going forward with the catching position? I just don't know. I don't have any answers.
Well, especially since, you know, Cologne and Syndergaard love throwing to Rivera. That's going to alter. It's not so much that that's a reason to bring Rivera back. It's a judgment on Travis, who did nothing at the plate. I mean, my goodness. And what's he going to be, 29, 28?
Yeah, he's up there now. I mean, I haven't looked at the age, but you're right.
We're at a point here where we were talking about a window before. Like, it is barely pried open for this kid.
Yeah.
I feel bad for him because, you know, he's got a ton of talent or had a ton of talent, and it just has not, you know, shaped up for him, whether because of his body or whatever the situation. So, yeah, I don't know. Catcher's an issue. The problem is it's an issue for almost every team in the league, and I don't know what, you know, it's funny because defense becomes such an importance for them with their staff that if they're getting production from these other positions, and you can sort of make that maneuver. But when the lineup has been the way it is, you know, you're attracted to the potential of d'Arnaud's bat, and I think that kind of gets them into muddy waters.
Yeah, and I think Wilson Ramos might have been a target for them in the offseason as a free agent, but now his injury, he's going to be down for a while, and he may not even really be able to be a catcher again, his second ACL surgery. So if that's not your target, then it falls off completely, where there really aren't any other great options out there in the free agency, and I'm not sure there's a catcher you could trade for. It's not like Texas is now going to turn around and flip Lucroy. That's not happening. So there might not be another option here. But the one thing, Matt, and again, it goes back to that's just baseball, is you always think you have this surplus. Mm-hmm. Forget the pitching for a second, but the Mets thought they had d'Arnaud, and we've got Plawecki coming, and oh my goodness, we have these two great young catchers, and it looks like, at least on the surface, and I hope this winds up being proven wrong down the road, that both of them might wind up being busts. I hate to use that word. It's still maybe a little too early to, but boy, we're getting close to the point where, whether it's, as you said, physical injuries with d'Arnaud, or Plawecki just isn't good enough, I don't know, but both of them are looking pretty shaky.
All right, so let's boil it down. We got to wrap this up. Where are we? October, November, December, January. Right after the Super Bowl, are we going to be, we'll just make it simple, happy, or incredibly disappointed in what transpired over the offseason? Where do you think this team's going to be when we get ready for spring training?
Very happy, and here's why. Good. Yeah, here's why. Pitching. It's all about pitching. I still think they're going to be healthy at some point, and they'll all get a chance to be in the rotation at the same time. And, of course, I'm referring to the big five studs. And so if you know after that point, let's say end of February, like you just said, after the Super Bowl, that you're going to have all those five starters together with maybe Cologne coming back as your protection as the sixth guy, you have to feel good about things. I really almost at that point don't care what else occurs as far as the position players go, because I trust Sandy is going to find a way to bring the right mix in. Whether that mix stays healthy and works out ultimately, who knows? But I think he'll find a way. He'll get you good enough bats where that pitching can be so dominant that the bats will be, again, good enough. So I think everybody should be pretty happy going into next season as long as the pitching looks good and it's healthy.
Again, that was SNY.TV's Rob Render. Thanks again for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A cast presented by Citi. Thanks for listening all season. Well, here we are. Another season in the books. Again, we're back to wait-and-see mode and debating where things will end up after the hot stove season. I'm with Rob. I think we'll be satisfied and mostly happy when spring approaches because, you know, not just for the reasons that Rob said, not just because of the pitchers, but because I do think Sandy will make changes to at least try and maximize the opportunities those pitchers give him. It's a small window, like I said, and look, if we learned anything this season, it's that nothing's guaranteed, and I just don't think at his age, after all the work they've done to get to this point, that he's just going to punt and hope for the best. But we shall see. Again, thanks for listening. I will probably take the next few weeks off, couple weeks off from podcasting, but I'll obviously still be writing every day on Mets Blog, so be sure to check that out. Thanks for listening, and as always, let's go Mets, and see you in the hot stove, everyone.
This has been the Mets Blog Q&A cast, presented by Citi, part of the SNY.TV audio network.